Welcome to Gardening Coast to Coast. I'm Gary Pilarczyk. My garden's on the East Coast in the state of Maryland, and I have a YouTube channel called The Rusted Garden.
Hi, I'm Callie Kim, and my garden is on the West Coast in Southern California, and my YouTube channel is Callie Kim Garden and Home. And Gardening Coast to Coast is all about helping you have a better garden no matter where you live. We're in the midst of the summer gardening season, and no matter if you live on the West Coast, the East Coast, somewhere in between, or anywhere in the world, we're all about sharing gardening together and helping us grow better as we grow throughout the season.
It's exciting June. My garden's almost doubling in size every week right now.
It's crazy. I think we did a garden tour over the weekend, and then just coming back on Monday for the live stream and kind of showing people around a little bit, I had a watermelon and a zucchini plant that literally must have grown 2 or 3 inches over the weekend. You can literally like see it grow before your eyes. So it's really fun to garden this month. Things are really taking off.
And we're going to be talking about, you know, kind of what you do in June and July, and talk about the reason of what's making the plants kind of accelerate, which, you know, we'll do, what is it? Foreshadowing, I guess. It's the soil temperature. Right. Like when that soil temperature gets into the 60s, plants really, really take off. But we're going to be doing an event on June 25th. Did you want to mention that?
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah, Jerry and I are going to be heading out east to the Rusted Garden Homestead, one of our favorite places to go. And we'll be doing an event on June the 25th at Freetown Farm. And Gary's right. involved in Freetown Farm as a board member. And we're going to be hanging out, sharing some gardening tips, just kind of a time to just kind of casually get to know everybody. We'd love to meet you. If you live anywhere in the Columbia, Maryland area, come on out and meet us. We'd like to shake your hand and maybe sign a book. If you've got your book there, they'll have books there for sale as well.
And talk gardening. Yeah, it's a donation event. So tickets are $15 and all that money is going to go to Freetown Farm. And for those of you that don't know what it is, it's 6.5 acres in Columbia, Maryland. And it's the last farmland in that area. And our gardens there are all set up for teaching, children, adults. We have a greenhouse. We do a lot there. So we would really love to see you out at Freetown Farm. And it's going to be set up to be kind of fun where we can just kind of mingle and talk shop basically, which is what I love to do, which I think what Gardening Coast to Coast is all about. But I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. So there will be a link in the show notes where you can register and sign up. You will need to RSVP, and we really look forward to meeting you there.
And you just completed your redesign finally. I saw a picture of it. It looked wonderful.
Yeah, we're so excited. It's just, we're calling it kind of our chill zone, and it's a really nice place to go and relax at the end of the day. You know, after working hard and enjoying ourselves or working hard during the day, it's nice to go and sit down, relax. Kind of gives us a really pretty view of the garden. And we really feel like we're kind of immersed in the garden. We can see, we're sitting right next to one of our new raised bed, watching the sunset, having a little fire. So it was really fun to get that done after planning it for so long.
I think that's so important. I actually have spent the last 4 days not really gardening, but I'm filling a sinkhole that's near the house, which was really important. So that's been taken care of. And I've taken 4 trees down that were growing in our cedars, and they were mulberry trees. So in doing the tree removal, I've kind of opened up a space, and you just kind of made me think about, you know, a sitting space. I'm trying to set up stations throughout my acreage that you can kind of just sit back, relax, and see, you know, the property from different views. Cause I really encourage people to really do that.
I think that's really important because we work hard, and it's important that we're refreshing and refueling ourselves so that we can work hard and then take care of the important people in our lives as well. And do our jobs well, love our families and our friends well. We've got to take care of ourselves in order to do that. So yeah, it's really a nice, refreshing new view of the garden that we've been enjoying.
That's perfect. And today we're going to talk about June and July, the warm weather. This is the real warm weather. So it's always hard to kind of really say, this is when you put in a tomato, this is when you put in a pepper, because all of our areas are a little bit different. And I know some of you, sadly, you know, I don't mean to laugh, are just coming out of the snow. I hope it's gone. Yeah. I hope your frost is gone. I hope the warm weather is coming soon. But the biggest thing that I kind of want to stress is when you try and rush out those tomato plants and those pepper plants early It can be done, but if your soil temperature just isn't into the upper 50s or 60s, sometimes your plants just kind of sit there and, you know, they shiver. They can kind of get purpley looking. They just don't look good. But now that it's in 60s, seriously, my plants really almost are doubling or tripling now every week. And it's just wonderful, green, lush growth.
Yeah, it's really nice to see how, I'm really working on just getting all those seedlings, not all of them, I won't have room, but a lot of the seedlings that I started indoors and outdoors out into the garden. And it's really fun because they take right off as soon as you get them into the soil. And in fact, some of the things I'm planting now are already passing up some of my earlier transplants that I popped in. And it's exactly for that reason. The nights are warmer. We're having nights in the high 50s and 60s now. The days haven't gotten too terribly hot yet. We've got the 80s this week. We'll be getting into the 90s, but generally speaking, we've had perfect gardening weather. So, now's the time to get out there and get those transplants in, and you'll truly be amazed at how quickly things grow here in the early summer days.
And that's probably one of the hardest things. Like when people talk to us, like, when do I start, you know, A, B, or C indoors? And it really does boil down to that soil temperature. For the warm weather crops, because just like you were saying, what you put out at the right time with the right warmth and the right conditions, they're catching up or passing what you may have put out a little bit too early, and they just didn't, you know, do as well. The craziest thing is, and I was just kind of shooting a video on it, is I have some tomato volunteers that are coming up, you know, that seeded, that just fell to the ground last year. Yeah. They are as big as some of my transplants. So I sit back and I'm like, why did I spend all this time growing transplants when the tomatoes that are just coming up on their own are just taking off and accelerating? And the reason you do that, maybe not for my zone or your zone, is if you're in a really short, if you have a really short growing zone or you don't have a lot of time for warm weather, you really do want to get those transplants out there. But don't feel like you have to rush everything out or do a ton indoors. If you have a long summer, you can start your plants by seed right now.
Yeah, we're actually talking about that on the live stream yesterday because several people were saying how they're like so behind on things. And even myself included, like I haven't even gotten my onions, they're started, but they're not actually planted out in the garden. They're sitting outside in a tray ready to get planted. And I was reminding myself and the live stream, people who were on the live stream, that it's not a race. It's not a competition. You know, we definitely want to be growing vegetables, but we also want to be enjoying ourselves and not feel like, oh my gosh, I'm so far behind. Because it's different for everyone, depending on the time that you have, your temperatures. But, you know, generally speaking, it is the time to get your warm weather veggies outside. And you do want to make sure, really important, that you're hardening off your vegetables if you're going straight from the indoors to the outdoors. You've got to take that time to really transition them gradually. Don't forget that.
And we talk about that a lot, and people ask for, well, how do I do that? Or they ask for the recipe, and it's really hard to say, because if you put them out on a cloudy day, they can stay out longer. If it's a full Sunday and you get that, you know, summerish sun beating down on your transplants, you are going to burn them and kill them. And if the sun is strong enough to damage the stems, you're going to lose your plants. So you really want to do 15, 20, 30 minutes the first day and just gradually get to it. You know, so let's just assume we get our plants into the nice warm soil. I've planted, let's see if I can do the list in my head. Peppers, eggplant, tomatoes, cucumbers, acorn squash, butternut squash, green beans just went in. The peas are still finishing up. We had crazy 95 degree heat last week. Now it's more normal, so I think they're going to survive. My purple top turnips are huge. They're ready to come out. So the root crops are getting to size. I mean, everything's moving along nicely. And I've done a good job of only having two squash plants. Well, I have four. I have a butternut, an acorn, a zucchini, and a squash. Years ago, I would have 12 squash plants and it would just, it'd be out of control, you know? I found that if you just go with fewer plants, you can maintain them better and you can, you know, we'll talk a little bit later about pest and disease, but if you don't overdo it in plants, you can concentrate your time and take care of the ones that you have.
Yeah. And that's really a good variety of squash that you have growing there. But for us here on the West Coast, There's the cool weather stuff is long gone. I actually just pulled out the last of the nasturtiums a couple weeks ago. So we're well into our tomatoes. I've got tomatoes coming on the vine already. My Tiny Tims are not quite ready to pick, but they're definitely going to be turning soon. And the eggplant are all in. I've got my first cucumber just about ready to pick. And some beans probably harvesting within the next week or so. So we're a little bit ahead of you there just because of, you know, we can start a little bit earlier. But yeah, all the warm weather stuff is definitely ready to go out. My lettuce is pretty much finished bolting, all the cool weather greens. And that was one thing I want to talk about too is now's a great time too to get your heat tolerant greens in. So get them started now. And that way, by the time the summer heat really hits in full force, you're going to have some kale and chard, and you don't have to take a big break in your salads for the summer. You'll have those heat tolerant greens ready to roll. So it's a great thing to do during June as well.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with the cool crops, is they like that soil temperature to be 40, upper 40s, 50 degrees. You know, they like the days to be in the 60s. And soon as the warmth comes for your warm crops, the soil warmth tells the lettuce to flower and bolt and make seed and stuff like that. And if people do want to save their own seeds, allow a lettuce plant or a spinach plant or maybe a pak choy or bok choy to flower. And you'll get these really cool seed pods. You can save them and trade with people. And you don't have to spend any money on new seeds.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And then while they're flowering, the bees are really attracted to those yellow, bright yellow flowers. So you kind of get a win-win. So if you have the space to leave them in, I always try and leave maybe one or two of the plants in for that very reason.
So is it Malabar spinach?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. That is such a gorgeous variety. The one I have growing is Red Malabar. It's in my heat tolerant seed collection, and it's like a vining variety. So it climbs. I have it on a trellis, and it's a beautiful red vine, and the leaves are kind of a red veined leaf, and it tastes delicious. It stands up to the heat. It can go like 95, 100 degrees heat, and it does not bolt or anything like that. So it's a beautiful variety and really tasty, very easy to grow as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of options. Yeah, I'm going big on beans this year.
Oh, good.
I want to have lots of green beans everywhere.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the easiest warm weather crops to grow. And I think we're going to talk about that as well. Now's a great time too to, you started your transplants indoors, but it's also a perfect time to direct seed things right in the garden beds, because like we were saying, the soil temperature is warm and you put those easy to grow veggies in and they're just really going to take off.
And I think that sometimes too, like when you were saying people were stressed and they're like, well, I didn't do my transplants, or are they ready or not? If you've done nothing in both of our zones and probably most of the US, if you just go out to a prepared bed or something and you drop in, two or three cucumber seeds, two or three squash seeds, thin them down to one plant because you don't want squash piling up on each other. They are going to germinate probably within 4 to 5 days if your soil's in that 60 degree range, and they're going to take off. So you don't need to stress yourself out that I didn't start them. The only thing that I would say that might be tough might be peppers where I'm at, because they take a while to get going, but you still even have time, time for that. So when in doubt, drop some seeds and see what happens. And I would encourage people to experiment too. Put in your tomato plant, drop a seed somewhere, not close to it, and just see what that plant does. Because I think you'll be surprised at how quickly it catches up to the transplant.
Yeah. I mean, all the work we do to start our seeds indoors is great, but now's the time with the weather warming up, that things really get a lot easier in the garden as far as getting seeds started. So kind of my top three are to direct seed at this time of the year are beans, squash, and cucumbers. Super easy. And I always like to say, these are vegetables you can grow all summer long. You can plant some now, plant some seeds again in a month or so, which would by that time would be the end of July. So you don't have all of your harvest all at once. You kind of can spread things out a little bit unless you're, really want to can and freeze and that type of thing. But that way you don't have big gaps in what you're harvesting from the garden.
And it's a good way. I mean, we've talked a lot about succession planting, so to speak, is that you put in your top three, say you put them in today, and then you start some as transplants, or you plant them again in whatever, 30 days. those plants that you have in the ground could get beat up by pests and disease, but your new ones that you're putting in are going to kind of thrive after that life cycle of those diseases and pests show up. So you can just keep going until really you get frost. And, you know, for us now, with kind of the way the weather patterns have changed, isn't till late October, November now. Wow. I mean, we can keep going.
Yeah, that's crazy. And for us in southern climates, really, you could plant, I mean, often I'll plant a third round in August and September to carry me throughout like the early winter months. I don't get quite as much harvest off of them because I don't have as much hours of sunlight in the garden. But you can definitely get that second or third wave going like once a month or so as you go throughout the summer months. Makes it really nice.
Yeah, I think we kind of get locked on cool weather crops, warm weather crops, you stop gardening. You know, until mm-hmm. you realize you got another cool weather season. But it's really about knowing your garden, knowing the amount of time you have, and really try planting your summer crops through June, through July, maybe even the beginning of August, and just see what happens. I know a lot of people say, you know, I am never going to grow squash again because that vine borer, which I know you guys don't get, I don't think.
we don't.
Takes out my squash every time. Well, you could try putting some in May, June. Vine borer comes, they finish their cycle, and then you just put more in July, and you get squash and zucchini afterwards, or you get cucumbers afterwards. So I just want to stress, plant around the problems that come to your garden, because they're all different for kind of each of our unique areas.
That's right. And one thing that I always like to do too at this time of the year is I like to start, well, I've started a lot of my flowers indoors. I've already gotten out. But at this point, I like to start kind of a new batch of flowers. And I usually just stick to the easy to grow ones. And I just throw seeds. I don't actually start them. I'll just throw seeds in the ground. And my two favorite are sunflowers and zinnias. Now, I already have a ton of sunflowers that are volunteers. Like you were saying, Gary, that somehow don't seem to need any care whatsoever, hardly even any water. They just grow like crazy. But I always like to go in and like drop in some seeds everywhere. The zinnias are one of my favorites. You know, next to some zinnias that are already growing, just pop some new seeds in. Because those are really flowers you can grow all summer. And that way, you know, like you were saying, if one gets powdery mildew or just dies, you've got more coming on to take its place. And then you're really encouraging a lot of pollinators to come on into your garden that way too. So veggies, easy
to
grow veggies.
I
do. Not to the extent that you do, but last year a lot of my zinnias had powdery mildew. And then we usually get it on the squash and cucumbers a little bit later in the summer, probably August or so.
And marigolds are kind of what I add in cosmos on my end.
Oh yeah, those are beautiful too.
They grow well, they grow quickly, and you can save yourself a lot of money too. It's always fun, you know. If you're kind of don't have a lot of time to go out through your garden, if you plant up marigolds or the zinnias in cups or your seed cells, keep them where they're not getting baked by the sun, but you know, somewhere where they get a couple hours, just grow them in a little flat. It's easier to take care of. And then you can just go pop those plugs in wherever you want and they're going to take off. They love this, again, warm soil and warm weather.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's nice.
In fact, I think it was just maybe 2 or 3 days ago, I pulled out the last of my nasturtiums and actually planted some zinnia little transplants and also some seeds. The zinnia seeds are already coming up. So case in point, you know, over the winter, I planted zinnia seeds. Some of them never came up or the birds got them. And now the soil temperature is warm and in 2 or 3 days, they're already popping through the soil. So just makes it easy and it's really rewarding. Kind of like immediate gratification. You know, you see it, you plant it, and then a few days later, you see it pop up.
Can I add okra to our summer mix?
Yes. I forgot to plant my okra this year, so I'm going to be doing that this week as well. I just like how the plant looks. I'm not a big fan of how it tastes, but I love, it's such a beautiful plant, and it just takes the heat like crazy.
It can get tall. It can be a screen. You can grow beans up it. The flowers are really pretty. I do like the okra. I don't cook it, but I eat it raw and in the garden when I'm walking around. I really like it that way. But it's such a heat loving plant that if you haven't grown it before, just grow it to see it, because they can get massive. I mean, I have them growing 7 or 8 feet tall with like a almost a 3-inch trunk at some point, and they'll just keep going and going. You have to harvest them like every other day, though. Once those flowers are coming, you have to keep harvesting. Why the pods are kind of smaller, maybe 3 inches or so, because they'll get woody and fibrous and hard to eat when they're getting to 5-6 inches long. I think
you can
see
the pods grow like from morning till night. It's literally how fast they grow. Yeah, it's crazy.
You can.
But the flowers look like tropical flowers. They're really pretty.
Mm-hmm. And they look nice mixed in with sunflowers too. So it's really cool. And I always like kind of big on kind of, I guess, I don't know what the right word is. I'll come up with a word at some point, but it's kind of like gardenscaping. So using the plants in a way to kind of create sort of sculpting or art, and you can eat them, I think is really cool. Especially when, like we were talking about, you've got that nice sitting area. It's like create something that when you're sitting there, just looks really cool to look at, and then watch over the weeks and months really develop and change.
Yeah. We were actually talking about that when we were sitting down there the other night, because on one side is the new raised bed I built, which is about maybe about 2 feet high. On the other side of our little space there, we put two jasmine, large jasmine bush trailing trees in, whatever you want to call it. So it kind of forms mm-hmm. like a little room around us, and you smell the jasmine on one side, you see the plants and the vegetables on the other side, and it just, you're kind of just immersed in that space. So yeah, I encourage our listeners here to really create some kind of little space. Doesn't have to be a big one, where you can really just immerse yourself in the garden and enjoy what you've created.
It's very, very important. And then the other thing too, is I was just looking, you know, pollinators, as you were saying, are really important, and the flowers could bring that in. If you want something that does really well, it's going to bolt because it's warm, but cilantro going in now grows really quickly, and it has these tiny little, you know, frail looking white flowers, but they bring in so many pollinators that you can scatter cilantro around. And then if you save the seeds, you can use that in cooking. I think that's what coriander becomes. I think it comes from the cilantro yeah. plant or something like that. But they're edible too. And if you plant cilantro somewhere and you just let it flower and create seed and drop, it'll keep coming back year after year. And it'll be a place that you can harvest it in a cooler time. But then it becomes a pollinator, you know, haven for these really tiny bees that are like so small. They're really, really cool.
Well, that's pretty neat. One thing I've kind of been wanting to learn about, this is just a little extra aside, is how to attract mason bees to my garden. So I've been doing a little bit of research on that. I don't know if you've ever done that, Gary, but I've been looking for little mason bee houses that I can kind of put around, and you fill it, from what I've been researching, I'm still kind of experimenting, but fill the little holes with like straw and pieces of wood and things like that. And they're really big pollinators, like a lot more than honeybees are, which I didn't really realize that. So it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. I have a little bug hotel, I call it. And it,
yeah, remember that.
It does a good job with praying mantises. Come in. So that's good. I mean, they're not so much pollinators, but you know, they create these kind of foam looking, but they're not really egg sacs. Or maybe they are egg sacs. Anyway, if you're ever like picking up your sticks or you're moving stuff around and you see something that looks like white foam on it, save that, because that's usually the praying mantis starting to, you know, kind of do its thing.
But I didn't realize that. I've seen little that
bug hotel.
Cool.
Yeah. But the little bug hotel and what you're talking about really does make a difference. They like a nice little place to live, shallow water in places too, that you can kind of keep water around, and you'll bring in all kinds of different pollinators.
Just make it pollinator friendly as much as possible. So we have a few questions to answer today before we move into part two of the podcast. And if you have questions for us, please email us at gardeningcoasttocoast@gmail.com. And that's Gardening Coast, the number 2, Coast. And we'll hopefully be able to answer it on a future episode of the podcast. So our questions today actually come from YouTube. And this one is from Cookie Mama 4. And Cookie Mama says, she's actually referring to a zucchini plant. She commented on a zucchini video. Do you have to wait until the plant is older in order to remove damaged leaves and stems? Also, should I cut off leaves that have been partially eaten away by bugs? Thank you very much. Your plants are beautiful. And I actually just did this morning on my zucchini plant. So maybe I'll jump in first on this one. Sure. I like to really remove the plants. The zucchini doesn't really need the leaves, or squash for that matter, doesn't really need the leaves that are below the first squash or the first flower. So it's a good way to kind of, you know, give a lot more airflow to your plant to help manage the size. I have several plants in my new raised bed that were just really exploding in growth and just kind of taken over. So I went in this morning and just removed the lower leaves. And the plants, you know, kind of wilt over a little bit when you do that, but then they usually perk right back up by the next day. But it's really a good way to manage the size. So I don't wait until the leaves start to look bad. I try and do it a little proactively. But yeah, I totally take off leaves that have been partially eaten away by bugs and or anything that's damaged or anything that has powdery mildew. But I think the key is really cutting that leaf as close to the stem as possible, because the zucchini leaves are, or not leaf, the stems are hollow. So if you leave that open, hollow stem, it could leave room for bugs to get in there, for disease to get in there. But as you get closer to the main stem of the plant, it kind of, the stem becomes more solid. So cut as close as you can to the main stem, but be really careful not to cut the main stem, but just cut off that main long stem that's connected to the leaf, if that makes sense.
Now, I know part two, we're going to talk about pests, but I'll forget by the time we get there.
Yeah.
So a great way to deal with squash and zucchini, we get the squash bugs, mm-hmm. is when you're watering your plant, is to water right at the stem of that plant for like 20 or 30 seconds. You're not only watering it, you're going to make any squash bug that's kind of hiding out down there, they're going to crawl to the top of the plant. They're going to go as high as they can, and you're going to be able to find them. I grab them and squash them, but you could throw them into soapy water or something like that. But a great way to kind of deal with those squash bugs is to soak the soil, wait a couple of minutes, and you'll see them all rise to the surface, and you can catch them and kill them.
Well, that's a good strategy. Okay, next question comes from Bonnie Bassett, and this is also about zucchini. I noticed you planted more than one plant in the hole. Do you leave them all, or do you pinch off to get one plant as they grow? I've never had good luck with my summer squash. I get one or two, and then either an insect gets the stem and kills it, or it just dies. I keep trying. And I think that's key, is don't give up.
Don't give up. And it, you know, goes back to what we were saying earlier. So do you keep two squash? I only keep one.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, like, I might have two little seedlings in my six pack, but, you know, that I've already started. I'll usually plant both of them and see which one takes off. And then I'll cut the other one out, you know, just trim it at the base of the plant. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't get too.
Yeah. That's what I normally do.
Yeah.
I don't really recommend planting one seed, because if you roll the dice and you get the wrong seed, it's not going to germinate. So you could put in two or three squash plants if you're doing it by seed, and then you remove them and just leave one plant. Cucumbers, I might leave two in a space depending on where I'm growing it and stuff like that. But anytime you're seeding or when you're dropping transplants, like you're saying, it's good just to see which one does the best, and then you do have to remove one. Also for Bonnie, I would say that it looks like she plants and the vine borer is out and active at that time. So know that that plant is probably going to die. You can try some strategies on it. But as soon as that plant dies, put in some more seeds or have a transplant going, you know, when you start seeing the vine borer show up, because you will get squash out of that second planting. And if you have to go to a third planting, you will get your zucchini, you will get your squash by just sticking with it.
Yeah, and that's why I like how she said she keeps on trying. Because sometimes it does take two or three plantings. I mean, I've been there as well. One thing that's really good, though, is to try and have some backups going. So like you were saying, Gary, you know, have a couple trays of squash plants or cucumber plants, things that might typically start to die off, going on the side of your house or on a shelf somewhere or just out in your garden. And that way, when you do have plants die, you're not completely crushed that all your squash plants have died. You have a few more to pop in to take its place. So it's a good strategy to have. Okay, next question comes from Susie. And Susie says, I'm preparing my soil for my first raised bed garden bed. How long after you prepare the soil can you put plants in the garden bed? Love your videos.
Well, that's kind of a big question, depending on how you prepare it. So if you're just doing like bagged potting mix, which is kind of expensive, but it can be done, or you're making it from peat moss and coco coir, you can kind of plant right away. If you're putting in animal manures or you're putting in compost that's not fully broken down, like 100% composted down, you might have to wait for that to break down further. And the reason being is if you put in materials that aren't fully composted or broken down, when you mix them into your soil, they want to finish breaking down. And in order for that to happen, microbes have to get involved. And then the microbes are pulling nitrogen out of the soil, challenging your plants for the nitrogen until it's finished breaking down. So it really depends on what you put in there. If you feel like you just put in, you know, basic soil, you got good compost in there, you threw in some fertilizer, you can really plant right away if you want to.
Yeah, that's usually what I do, is because I'm usually pulling things out and then planting again right away, with the exception of our new raised bed, where I filled it with, you know, some older soil that I had just laying around. And then I also added some fully broken down chicken manure. And then we waited about a week to plant, but it wasn't because we couldn't plant right away. We just didn't have the time to do it right then. So yeah, as long as it's broken down, you can go ahead and get your plants out there and you're good to go.
If you're ever planting into a new bed and maybe you put in compost or manures that didn't fully break, that aren't fully broken down, you'll see your plants kind of stay small. They might get a little bit yellow. When you see that, give them a big drink of fish emulsion, a water-soluble fertilizer. The water-soluble fertilizers are immediately available to your plants. I also use AgroThrive now, but hit them with that water-soluble fertilizer. That plant will get more nitrogen. It will start to take off. And if you have to, do it again in a week, so you can kind of work through, you know, maybe soil that you set up that's still breaking down, so to speak, by just giving your plants more soluble nitrogen.
Great suggestion. Okay, moving into part two here. Now's the time. The pests will start to move in at some point during the summer for most of us. So it's a good idea to kind of expect that, kind of manage your expectations. Again, so you're not like totally crushed that you have pests on your plants. I mean, it's going to happen to all of us. So when you expect to have a couple of things that are you're ready to roll with, you're not going to be so disappointed when things happen. But a good time to prepare for pests and then to develop a pest control routine. I know we talked about that in a few episodes ago,
right?
But it's always good to revisit that.
Well, it's so important. It's not, you know, so much the product that you pick. You can pick whatever you want. It's the gardener sticking to the routine, and starting early really makes a difference. And then just kind of sticking with it. I haven't found necessarily anything to be better than anything else. It's when I stick to the routine, my garden does the best. So like the squash bug egg example that I was giving you, the squash bugs show up here end of May, beginning of June. They haven't started laying eggs or doing the whole mating thing. And if you can catch them now, you're going to greatly reduce all the egg laying. And so every time I go out to water now, as I soak that base of the zucchini plant, squash plant, whatever, and I wait, and when they come up to the top, I kill them. And that really makes a big difference. Then you're not dealing with trying to catch up with this infestation that has started.
Yeah, it really is helpful to prevent it, like you're saying, and to develop that daily routine. I try and get out first thing in the morning when it's not quite as hot, like 6:37 in the morning, and just kind of go around and check everything. Now, we've had tons of the little white butterflies flitting around. In fact, someone on my live stream said, "Oh, look at all those butterflies behind you." I'm like, "Well, unfortunately, they're not the good kind of butterflies." So I know that the cabbage looper is right behind it. Now, I don't really like to cover, I'm going to have to cover my whole garden if I was going to protect it from that white butterfly. So I did go around today and check, and sure enough, there were a lot of little cabbage loopers on some of my kale. So I was able to spray those off and pick them off, not really spray them off, but just pick them off and take care of it before they eat a lot of holes in my kale. So really important to just develop that routine of checking your garden every day or every other day so that you can stay ahead of the game before you have a big problem that happens.
And yet, with moving into the summer, like I have the red Russian kale going, which does well in heat, like we were talking about. Mine is covered in ag fabric. It's a nice dome that zips up. It was really for the apple trees and fruit trees that I had, but I have it around there, so the butterfly can't get to that. I don't like using a lot of it because it kind of is an eyesore to me. But what I learned was is I'm growing a lot less kale now so that I can kind of eat through it. And it sounds kind of gross, but if you're harvesting the leaves really quickly, then you're really removing the cabbage looper. You're either cooking them and eating them, or you're washing them off. But if you have too many plants and you're not consuming those plants, it's going to give more room for the insects to really kind of take off and infest your garden. So you want a good balance of what you can eat and manage versus it just kind of sitting around and the moth is you know, coming to you.
So the plant kind of gets old anyway. It, you know, gets a little tougher as it gets bigger. So if you're picking and eating it when it's young, it's going to be a lot more flavorful. And then the pests aren't going to come around quite as often either. But one thing I do is just spray things off with water. Like if I see a couple little issues, a few aphids starting off or whatever, I'll typically do that for several days before I try and spray it with anything, because I would much prefer not to spray if I don't have to. So that's kind of a good thing to keep an eye out for as well. It's not going to hurt your plants.
Yeah. Start with the minimal amount of, what would we call it?
Prevention, or?
I don't know. Water's pretty benign. Yeah.
In your arsenal?
Don't go to the big guns. Exactly. Yeah. Don't take out the big stuff and dust and throw stuff everywhere. Because sometimes the water works and stuff like that. Or just use it really wisely. Like I just did a video on using insect dust, organic spinosad or non-organic seven dust. It doesn't matter. It kills all insects, but just put it on a couple of leaves and let it go, you know, instead of dusting the whole plant, the stem, the flowers and stuff like that, that become a problem for the pollinators and bees. A little bit of dust, let it sit. Those beetles will get to it and they will walk through it, and you can manage your garden that way. The whole goal, like you were saying, is they're going to show up. We just want to manage the damage down so that we can get continued harvest till our frost comes. So kind of look at it that way, that it's not that they show up, it's that they're showing up and they're doing less damage every year, and you can still get your vegetables out of there.
And I feel like over the years, like as my soil has improved, my plants are becoming healthier every year. I'm using, you know, a lot of worm castings and things that really develop all the beneficial bacteria and all the microbes in the soil. That's improving. The plants are healthier over time. So I find that I'm having less pests as I go on throughout my gardening seasons, I guess you might say. They definitely do still come in. Doesn't mean I've done anything wrong or you've done anything wrong if it happens, but the plants seem to be healthier, a little bit healthier year after year.
And this is kind of where I usually say too, is keep notes, you know, in your phone, wherever you want to do it, but you really want to kind of mark down that, you know, the white butterfly showed up behind me during my live stream on YouTube. And then, you know, when they're showing up, because, you know, neem oil probably could have went down, I'm just guessing, but maybe 4 weeks ago in your area. Like, so you want to kind of get the timing down so that neem oil is a great way to deal with the cabbage looper and chewing worms and stuff like that. But you don't want to spray after you find all these holes in your leaves, because you've got eggs on there now, you've got tiny worms. For the neem oil to work, it takes 2 or 3 days, but you're going to have hatching worms, hatching insects and stuff like that. So the sooner you start a plan, the better you are in the long run.
That's right. There's a lot more details on our previous episode on, I think we did a whole one on just insect sprays, right? A few episodes ago. So go back and check out and for more details. Plus we've got videos too. Watch.
Yeah. It's just so important. Like I, you know, for this podcast, I just really want to stress the soil is warm. You're not behind. Get seeds in the ground and you have a longer season than you think. And then for pests and disease, don't wait till you see them. Just kind of start prevention early. It makes a big difference.
Makes a huge difference. Now, I think one thing I like to do during June is really make sure that I'm prepared for the heat, because usually our Junes are a little bit more on the milder side as far as temperatures go. I've mentioned before, we've got the June gloom a lot of times going on this month where it's cloudy for a few hours in the morning. And then it kind of keeps the heat away. You know, it keeps the heat at bay for later in the day. It doesn't get quite as hot. But July, August, and even into the fall for us are very hot. So, I mean, I have drip irrigation all over my garden. I couldn't do it without that, especially right now with all the water restrictions and things that are going on in California. Drip irrigation is key for that, because it totally reduces the water evaporation. The water's getting where you need it, and you're just not going to have to water as much. with a drip. Now, I know for you, Gary, you get so much rain, you don't even have to worry about that. I mean, it's crazy. When we were there, we loved the
No.
rainstorms.
It's raining right now. It's
Oh
just
my
coming and
gosh.
going.
Wow.
So I don't use drip irrigation. I know you guys have to. We're on well water, number one. So
Okay.
it was funny. I
Nice.
was doing a video showing how you can judge 2 inches of water around the base of a plant. And I took my hose out of the bucket and it was just running for like 2 minutes or 3 minutes, and the water's just running into the mulch. And somebody responded, yeah, somebody responded, "You're wasting water. You could have captured that. You could have done all this." And I'm thinking, in my area, it's not really wasteful because it comes out of a well. We get plenty of rain. I understood what the person was saying, but it's very different. So I don't have to kind of do the drip irrigation. I don't waste water typically, except in that video for 2 minutes when the hose was putting water out there, because we get plenty of it. And there's also a difference too. Like, I think you might do your drip more at the base of the plant or in that immediate
Yeah.
area. But there's also soaker hoses too. So if I were to install drip irrigation, I would really have to redesign my garden because it would be just crazy for me to go out there
Yeah.
and try and wind soaker hoses everywhere and drip irrigation everywhere. Anyway, I use watering as a time, and it can take me an hour and a half to water all of my gardens. But I'm watering with one hand, I'm weeding with the other hand, but I'm also inspecting the plants to see what's going on with pest and disease, and that does make a big difference. But watering is a big issue. Like, you guys get have
Yeah.
you ever not had never have you ever been off restrictions? I feel like California is on restrictions all
There
the
was one
time.
year we got a lot of rain where we really didn't have to worry about it, but for the most part, it's been a drought for the past probably 5 to 7 years. But there's even some people I know in Northern California on well water, like you are, their wells are drying up. So when that happens, what do you do? I mean, what do you do? Like, you don't have to worry about drip because you get rain and then you can supplemental water. We couldn't survive without drip irrigation. But not only that, like the big thing I'm doing this year is I'm like doubling up on my mulch, and I'm noticing a huge, huge difference. I previous years I just put a couple inches down. This year I'm putting 3 or 4 inches down, and the soil's really staying nice and moist under there. So I don't have to run my drip near as often as I used to. So that's helping a ton. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for the heat, that's the big deal. Because the watering video, I was just showing people how everyone always says, "How often do I water?" And I was like, "I'm not being smart, but you water when your plants need it." It
Right.
varies too greatly to say. But that mulch, deep watering is great. You could deep water your plants once a week. They're going to survive. You're not going to get great production, but they'll be okay. But that mulch keeps moisture in that top 4 to 6 inches, also keeps your soil cooler. Your plants love it. They do better because, I mean, we talked about it in our last video, or I'm sorry, our last podcast, that when tomato plants start getting too hot at the root zone and they shut down, like pepper plants will shut down,
Right.
your crops will shut down when that soil is getting really hot and dry. So I believe it. Three
Yeah, it's
inches of mulch, 4 inches
huge.
of mulch, they're going to
It's a
be happy.
lifesaver in the heat and with the water as well. And then another thing that I use frequently is shade cloth. I get the question all the time, why are my tomato flowers drying up? Why are my pepper flowers dropping off? Peppers can take the heat a little bit more. But once you get into the mid-90s or especially into the hundreds or higher, your plants, like you were saying, they're stressed. They're just responding and trying to stay alive. So the way they're responding is by drying up and dropping off their flowers. They're not worried about production or anything like that. They're just trying to stay alive. So shade cloth can be a lifesaver. You may not be able to shade your whole garden. I know, Gary, it'd probably be impossible for you to shade your garden. But
Right.
you can shade a portion of it. Maybe you shade your special tomato plants or your cucumbers that you're almost ready to harvest. So it really is super helpful, and you could keep your plants 10 or so degrees cooler under that shade cloth, which can make a really, really big difference.
It even goes lower than that. I mean, it could be a 20 degree difference,
Yeah.
and you're absolutely right. It makes a big difference. And I would add too, kind of what you were alluding to, is you might not be able to shade every plant, but if you pick, two tomato plants, a group of peppers, maybe a cucumber plant, you can take better care of those. They can continue to produce while your other plants go into survival mode. And then when everything starts to adjust temperature-wise, you know, you take the shade cloth down and the garden gets going again.
That's right.
So I think it's just important not to feel like when the heat comes and problems come that you have to take care of everything. Just pick something, just like you were saying, and take care of a couple of plants. They'll produce, and then you can kind of move on to the next phase of the garden.
That's right. And don't feel like you have to run out and purchase all kinds of different shade cloth. You can even just throw like a couple old bed sheets over a few plants. It's not going to hurt it that it's not getting sun for a couple of days. You know, just make sure you leave a sheet on your bed to sleep on. But or even like right. Back when sheer curtains used to be the big thing, you know, I had all these sheer curtains. Mm-hmm. So I took them down and switched to something else. I saved all that fabric. So now I've got a bunch that I can go out and throw over my plants. And it does have a little bit of a translucency to it. So get a little bit of sun, but it protects your plants as well.
It makes a big difference. And it's worth experimenting too. A lot of people in really hot zones. And, you know, sometimes people can't garden July, beginning of August, or they can't grow. They have a hard time growing tomatoes and cucumbers and stuff July, August, because it's just so hot. They just don't do well. So sometimes your warm crops get shifted to later parts of the summer or beginning of the fall. So your temperatures really are going to make a difference. The ambient temperature, the sun pounding down, how much mulch are you using, shade cloth, you know, and the soil temperature, you know, notes, and just getting out there and doing it is your best friend for figuring out, you know, how to have a garden that thrives through your climate.
That's right. And I think too, I know there's a viewer on our live stream, Patricia, she's in Arizona and she's already into the hundreds. And she mentioned yesterday that she just has learned over the years what to grow in the summer. So she grows things that are heat tolerant. She doesn't even bother, like you were saying, putting in things that aren't going to work during that time, and then saves the, you know, the other types of vegetables for maybe early in the spring or later in the fall over the winter time. So you just kind of learn what grows best through your garden, through the different climates as well.
Yep. I love it. I mean, every year you get a new year to kind of look back and see what worked, what didn't work, and come up with a new plan. And, you know, I'm already thinking, you know, when do I want to start stuff for August, you know, get it into the fall. And it's just a lot of fun.
It's kind of crazy. I was thinking that too, like here we are in June and I'm already thinking fall gardening, you know, but let's get through the summer and then we'll talk fall gardening eventually here, probably August, right? On the podcast.
Slow and
it'll
steady.
Be here before we know it. So just kind of to wrap up here for what to do in June or July, it's definitely not too late to start. If you haven't started yet, go ahead and drop some of those easy seeds that we talked about in. Get your transplants out. If you haven't got them out yet, get ready for pests, get ready for the heat. And the cool thing is there's lots of different places you can be part of a garden community, whether it be here on the podcast. No, it's not really a give and a take here on the podcast, but you can join the Facebook Gardening Coast to Coast group, watch our videos, be part of our live streams, and we can all share tips together. That's one of the things I love about the gardening community is people are always willing to share and give help to other gardeners. So don't forget, if you live in the area, to sign up for the Free Town Farm event on June 25th. There'll be a link in the show notes. And we really appreciate you joining us on the Gardening Coast to Coast podcast.
Yeah, and we'd love to see you at Free Town Farm. Just talk about gardening. And we will talk with you all next time.
All right. Thanks for listening.